Good afternoon and welcome to the second edition of Destinations for All here in Brussels. By way of introduction, Travability was formed back in 2007, both as a specialist travel agency for travellers with a disability and as a consultancy to the tourism industry to help them develop accessible tourism product and services. Back in Montreal in 2014, we presented a paper with a tongue-in-cheek title called The Disabled Traveller's Guide to the Galaxy, in where we really examined some of the key barriers that were preventing people with a disability from travelling and to their fullest potential, and what was stopping the tourism industry from taking accessible tourism as a serious part of the market. Also in 2014, Ross Callodine from Visit England produced some astounding figures and coined the term the Purple Pound to represent the sheer value that accessible tourism was starting to represent to the various visitor economies around the world. Ross's figures then put accessible tourism at 14% of the overnight market and 20% of the day trip market, with a growth rate nearing 33%. Recent figures from Australia have verified those sort of percentages of the total market share. Figures produced earlier this year put the value to the Australian visitor economy at $10.8 billion, which was $400 million higher than the Chinese inbound market to Australia, which is one of Australia's key tourism segments. When we look closely at the market, we can see that the growth is being driven by the baby boomers. Now, the baby boomers started retiring on the 1st of January 2011 and will continue to do so for 20 years. They will command in excess of 50% of the wealth of most developed countries. And in areas like tourism, their spend will represent 50% of the total expenditure. Unlike previous generations, the baby boomers will spend all of that wealth in their retirement. Furthermore, it is a generation that has never taken no for an answer. And in fact, it was the generation that forced Levi jeans to change the cut of the jeans when they all turned 40 to cater for their expanding waistlines. But let's get back to tourism. What is tourism? It's often been described as the art of selling dreams, making those wishes, aspirations come to life. And in fact, a truly remarkable travel experience leaves a visitor changed in some way at the end of it. But let me ask you a question. Disability is now the largest minority group in the world. What differentiates it from every other single minority group? The answer is, it is the only minority group that anyone can join in an instant. So what does that actually say about the sort of people that are travellers with a disability? What it actually says is they come from all walks of life, all age groups, all socioeconomic groups, all races and creeds, and most importantly, from every aspirational group in society. In fact, one could argue that it is probably skewed slightly towards the more adventurous, which has led to accidents that has made them disabled in the first place. If we look at what I call the continuum of ability, you'll see it's a two-pointed diagram. What we do on the left-hand side of it is draw an arbitrary line, which is there in purple. Everything to the left of that line is someone with a disability, and it's spread across mobility, hearing, vision, cognitive, and so on. What we tend to do as an industry, though, is look to the far left, where I've drawn that second dotted line, and view travellers with a disability or people with a disability as passive bystanders, people who aren't involved that don't want to participate with the rest of their travelling group. I'm going to now show you a short video of two of my clients on a holiday in New Zealand. Probably not the sort of holiday you were expecting or the sort of outcomes that you were expecting. Those two girls, Kirsten and Megan, had an absolute ball on a 12-day adrenaline-packed, typical New Zealand-type experience. The trip that they were on were actually put together by an organisation called Making Tracks. Making Tracks, and Jezza Williams is here in Brussels, so hit him up at any of the breaks, lunch or after conference sessions to learn a little bit more about what he does. But in a nutshell, what Jezza did was approached each of those organisations, and he's continuing to do so, to incorporate various pieces of equipment into their product offerings to make their normal experiences accessible to people with a disability. In other words, it is mainstreamed adventure. It's not specialist programs or specialist tourism operators. What I'd like to now do is put the continuum of ability back up. And as you can see now, the disability line has become a triangle inside the far right-hand side. I would contend there are many travellers with a disability out there who do far more adventurous things than half of the able-bodied population. As an industry, historically, we've been very good at providing high support tourism activities. If anyone's done a trek in Nepal, a climbing expedition, gone scuba diving, or whitewater rafting, you'll know that the ratio of staff to clients are quite high. In fact, if you go and do a moderate level climbing expedition in a place like Nepal, you'll find the staffing ratios are 11 to 1. That's staff to clients to cater for the cooking, the climbing, the teaching, and the support. There's absolutely no reason why we as an industry can't use that expertise that we have from adventure activities to create opportunities for people with a disability, as Jezza has done, and by using the appropriate equipment. If we actually look at that, since Montreal, there has been an enormous raft of new equipment made available for people. We have the Trail Rider all-terrain chair that was in its infancy 4 years ago and is now predominant. In Australia alone, there are over 20 Trail Rider chairs stationed in various national parks around the country. Off-road hand cycling is gaining momentum, even now to the point of modern power assist and electric motors being applied to them, which really then allow them to go almost anywhere. In fact, the big challenge for national park managers and trail builders is the ability now to grade and create double track as opposed to single track to cater for the growing market. Canoes are another one that's got big developments, from relatively cheap seat stabilizers to pontoons at the back and a raft of canoe launches to allow people with a disability to get into and out of canoe on dry land and then enjoy the wilderness. Stand-up paddle boards. There's at least four versions now that'll either cater for a wheelchair or have some form of mono-ski type chair attachment onto the stand-up paddle board. That brings me to sit skis and cable parks that are embracing people with a disability on wakeboards and sit wakeboards. And finally, we've seen a reduction in price on beach matting. Now, beach matting is simply matting that is rolled out across soft sand down to the hard sand or the water's edge. It's made of recycled plastic. Great for the environment, but it also opens up the beaches, not just to people in wheelchairs, but even the elderly that find difficulty in walking across soft sand. In Australia now, there are two beaches that have 24/7 beach matting, and the beach matting's been in place for 4 years. All this new equipment is all great in concept, but I'm now going to show you another short video that really says why we want to do this. And this is the reoccurring theme of this talk, is that it is all about the customer and is all about creating experiences and, if you like, leaving people changed in some way.
I grew up in England. My parents were a bit avid about hiking, so they started taking me and my sister on hiking holidays. I have multiple sclerosis, and I've had it for 20 years. And probably about 10 years into that, I became wheelchair bound. I had to mourn that hiking in the wilderness.
In 2009, Dave and I were on what we thought then was to be our last trip to Canada, where we both used to live. And a dear friend of his had hired the Trail Rider from British Columbia Mobility Opportunity Society, who make the Trail Riders. Within probably 90 seconds, he was in love.
With a trail rider, you're in wild, isolated places. Suddenly there's much more, the flowers, the animals. There's a psychological and mental boost to that.
Within, I think it was a couple of months, suddenly there's a trail rider in the Grampians, and Dave and I felt like we were enfolded by Parks Victoria as part of the Trail Rider team, and we felt really welcomed.
The World Parks Congress came to Sydney in 2014, and because it was coming to Sydney, Parks Victoria had a major role in coordinating one theme throughout that Congress, which was healthy parks, healthy people. Ros and myself were invited to be part of that. Right from the outset there, I picture the trail rider on the stage in the plenary session, and that came to pass. I have a picture of this reaching out across Australia.
It's given us purpose, knowing that we might be getting other people with severe disabilities into beautiful places like this.
Look at that. That view. The fact that we're on the edge of this cliff, as opposed to behind the railing over there, is just absolutely a testament to the trail rider. Could not be any other way. Can you imagine bringing a wheelchair through that?
It's given us something meaty to get our teeth into. It's really an incredible coating of icing on the cake of life.
From that video, you can see just how important it is for the people with a disability to actually get out and experience the world. Parks Victoria have done an excellent job, and there are now 18 of those trail riders throughout Australia. Moving on from them, let's have a look at some other really good examples. The first is Jervis Bay Wild on the south coast of New South Wales. It's a whale watching operation that has a $70 million catamaran that is fully roll on from bow to stern. In addition to that, the jetty, the cafe, the booking areas are all fully accessible. It was the addition, though, of a $3,500 winch at the back of the boat that allowed people with mobility issues to get into the boom net and from the boom net out to experience swimming with the dolphins, that gave the captain and the owner of that operation the greatest satisfaction. If we move on to Moonlit Sanctuary, which is a small wildlife preserve in the south of Melbourne. Moonlit Sanctuary has everything you would expect from an accessibility point of view. Accessible car parking, it's got an accessible toilet, fully accessible cafe and gift shop area, and wide hard-packed paths throughout. In addition to that, there are seats every 50 metres for people to be able to take a rest while they're viewing the animals, and each of the viewing enclosures has a full glass-fronted section from the top of the enclosure right to floor level to cater for children or people sitting in wheelchairs. The auditorium bird show area has a hearing loop, but one of the best features is a simple piece of plastic pipe in the koala experience that allows the branches to be moved to all heights, again to cater for children, people sitting in wheelchairs, or a basketball player who's 6'8". Phillip Island Nature Parks has long been one of Victoria's major tourism attractions. It caters for over 750,000 visitors per annum. And the three parks, the Koala Conservation Centre, the Nobbies, and the Penguin Parade, are all state-of-the-art in terms of their accessibility, from their signage, from their interpretive centres, their wheelchair-accessible treetop boardwalks, and even the underground bunker has multiple viewing heights, again, to cater for children, people sitting in wheelchairs, or the standing population. But what Phillip Island Nature Parks did that was different, and it is still different from anyone else in Australia, is to put accessibility on the front page of their webpage. It's no longer hidden under frequently asked questions or under accessibility of planning your trip, because Phillip Island Nature Parks sees accessible tourism as an integral part of their product offering. And that sends a very powerful message to travellers with a disability that the park not only recognises them, but wants them to come and enjoy the experience. In the opening video, we touched on Making Tracks. Making Tracks is a New Zealand operation that has incorporated a series of adrenaline-packed adventures into somewhere between a 10 and 14 day itinerary. What Making Tracks has done is actually get mainstream tourism operators like the Whitewater Rafting to incorporate a seat into their rafts, their parachuting operation to have a harness to lift someone with a mobility impairment legs off the ground coming into land. You have a wheeled launching platform for the paragliding, adaptive horse riding seats, and perhaps the best thing of all was a little sled that the helicopter line adapted
to take people up onto the glaciers. In fact, Helicopter Line will now admit it's one of the best things they did, because up until the introduction of that sled, they had someone with a mobility impairment. They were forced to remain in the helicopter while their friends were out on the glacier.
Up until now, I've spoken a lot about individual pieces of equipment, individual examples of attractions, and talked a little bit about what makes a traveller with a disability, or who a traveller with a disability is. But what we need to concentrate from here on in is the entirety of a trip. What makes a true travel experience? It was once said that a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. I would contend that an accessible journey starts with the first mouse click, the first piece of excitement, of planning. Therefore, if we look at the entire travel chain, information becomes critical. And information more and more and more must become mainstream. It must become part of the total information package of a destination, of an attraction, of a wholesaler, of a tour operator. If we think back to the baby boomer generation, the one thing I didn't say early on with the baby boomers see themselves as simply getting older. I say older, not old. They will never see themselves as disabled. They will simply see themselves as parts of their body not working as well as it once did. Remember Levi Strauss? They will expect the tourism industry to cater for that. They won't be looking for specialist websites. They won't be looking for specialist accessibility apps. They'll be looking for the whole lot. When it comes to airlines, we've got to get better on the travel chain for our assistance packages. It's all very well to have assistance from the point of check-in, but that doesn't get someone from their car to the curbside to the check-in. The same as the other end. You get off the airplane and go to your accommodation. Many hotels these days have complimentary transfers from airport to a hotel. Virtually none have complementary accessible transport. When we look at destinations as a whole, we need to make sure that our accessible information is on tap. If I take the examples as I did earlier of Phillip Island Nature Parks, one of Victoria's biggest attractions, and one that does accessibility extremely well, there is no way to get there on a standard day trip. And Melbourne operates day trips down to the island daily. There's not one operator that operates those day trips with an accessible bus or an accessible lift into a bus. So what I'm really saying, the next challenge for accessible tourism is to really look at this travel chain in detail and start to bring together the elements. And that really starts with national tourism authorities. It goes down to state or county or regional tourism authorities, and then down to individual destination managers to ensure that we start looking at this as we do any other travel package. It's only when we look at it at its entirety that we'll then have that clear pathway to the restaurant at the end of the universe. Enjoy the rest of your conference. And good day.